welcome to Working Classy,
a show about creativity,
productivity,
doing what you love,
and making money.
We're your hosts. I'm Isabel Lee.
And I'm Laurel Hachinova. Welcome to episode 25 with Shannon Mateski, actress, director, and producer from Berkeley, California. Hey, Shannon.
Hey, hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Of course.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Are you in Berkeley right now?
I am not. I'm actually outside of Washington, or outside of Seattle in Washington.
Okay. So you're West Coast though.
I'm West Coast. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I'm in Oakland right now. So I was like, oh my gosh, you're
I
so
saw
close.
Your hat.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I've actually known you, Shannon, for how long at this point? I can't even count on two hands.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It has to at least be like 2008, 2009.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
That's been a long time, which is
I have actually had the pleasure of watching a lot of the things that you've done, especially while you were still in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And participated. Like, you were my first person to go to for graphic design because I had no idea what I was doing. So you helped me a lot. Like, get some of my first shows out there. It was really, really, really dope to have an early collaborator. Very baby entrepreneur, but I really appreciated having somebody creative to help me out.
So yeah.
Saved me.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
Yeah.
So shall we dig into all the things Shannon Mateski right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
First of all, if you would like to give us maybe a little background of the variety of things you've done, because you've never just been boxed into one type of creative outlet.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm originally from Berkeley, California, borderline South Berkeley, Oakland, and I grew up pretty much as a kid interested in performance art. I've never been a sports kid, so performance was my thing. I've also been craftsy, just like way more of like the art nerd, you know? And I was blessed enough to, as I was going into high school, at the time, all that was available were the local high schools, and then an arts high school opened up, Oakland School for the Arts, famously known because Zendaya and Kehlani went there, but I went there when no one was famous. But that really set me off to really kind of decide what I wanted to do for college. And when it came down to it, at first I was like, oh, maybe I'll do history. Maybe I'll, you know, study all these other kind of academic things. And I was like, no, really, like, I hate homework. And I just want to like lay on the floor and keep doing yoga. So I'll go to college. Which led me to Chicago. I was so grateful. It was really the only big college I got into, which was DePaul University. I went to the theater school and went there and continued my studies. There they had, at the time, a very particular program called the CUT program, where they let in 56 freshmen and then they would cut you after the end of your first year.
Whoa.
So I really had to kind of like bust my butt and stay tenacious to stay in that program. And I made it through that first year, which was really beautiful.
Wow,
so
that's cool.
Graduating from Chicago. And then I stayed in Chicago for 4 years after that. But you know, once somebody graduates from college, depending on where you go, but for the most part, nobody tells you what to do next. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And I also had been growing up very much from the Bay Area with an activist background and as a poet, as a young poet. And when I went to college as an actor, they were like, you have to let go of being a poet or you'll never be an actress. And I was like, what? What does that mean? So of course, I had an existential crisis. But once I graduated, you know, I really understood what they were saying. They were pretty much saying like, let down one prong in the fire to get good at another.
Mm.
You know? But upon graduation, I didn't really feel super fulfilled. And I was like really trying to figure out like, you know, who do I want to be in the world now that I'm in the world? So I decided to really incorporate kind of poetry back into my personal work, as well as incorporate teaching and education, because growing up in the Bay Area, you know, part of social justice is giving back, paying forward, and we have been taught to be educators. So it was really important for me to step back into that role. So I kind of got a day job in some education / outreach positions, as well as still was hustling as an actor. And then to kind of feed my poet side, I started developing my own work. So I wrote my first one-woman show, which is what Iz was helping me on, which was so dope. Again, that ended up winning a grant, which allowed me to travel, which was really dope. And then I worked in a lot of traditional houses while I was in Chicago. So worked traditionally as an actress, non-traditionally as a performer, and then as an educator. And then when I came back from tour, so about 3-4 years into my post-grad life, I was kind of waiting for what's the next thing, you know, waiting for my acting career to keep up steam. And I was kind of ready to change gears. You know, Chicago's cold. So I was like, I'm ready to like try a different city. Let's see what else is available. So I was getting ready to go to New York. And a organization who I did a lot of poetry with and had been working with contractually via the summer, they called me and offered me a job pretty much. And they were like, you could come to California, back to the Bay Area and do this job. And it really wasn't in my schedule, I guess, or in my plan, but I saw it as an opportunity to go back home and connect with family. And so I did that. I took this job. Also, it also gave me an opportunity to build some professional credibility. And I was like, I think it would be smart for me to do that in case I do need a fallback from my acting career. So let me go build in this these professional capacities now. So I did that for about a year and a half in the Bay Area, ended up writing another one-woman show based on my journey there. And then I moved to New York. And I moved to New York, the job kind of transferred. So I started off with a nonprofit job, but was really missing my life as an artist, and probably spent about 2 years in that job. And then I quit my job and went back into being a full-time artist. And that's kind of where I've been in the past 2 years. I was so blessed to be back on stage, and I got a show that was only a 3-person show, and I was one of the 3 people. So like that was one of the first things back. And I've just kind of been really slowly but surely like building what my artist life means for me, and getting back into like an actor's shoes, which means like, you know, I don't have like the professional, you know, traditional income, but I'm actually just like living more fulfilled and more free. And then the crisis happened, right? So then COVID happened, and now I am with my partner and her family in Washington. But we hope to move to LA. That is kind of our end goal. We were already making the intentional exodus out of New York to head to LA, because these actor dreams are not going to stop. She's also an actress. So we're trying to like stop, you know, pussyfooting around and just go for what we want. So we're going to try to get to LA and trying to hit the ground running.
That's super cool. Yeah. So you were doing the 3-person show in New York though.
No, it actually ironically was in California, in San Diego.
Oh, got it. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Which, as much as I have been getting back into my actor life, the fact that I booked something that wasn't in New York didn't really help my actor's life in New York. Yeah. So very much in New York, people don't know me as an actor for the most part. I did not live a very actor's life in New York. But here's something that I also completely forgot. While I was in New York and had the kind of day job, I knew I wasn't completely fulfilled, right? And I had these skills as a producer, and I had these skills as an artist, and I wanted a place to perform. So I actually created a show called Queer Abstract, which was a queer variety show. And we hosted that once a month in Brooklyn. And I made myself the host because I wanted a place to perform. So I tried out a bunch of comedy and like made a bunch of jokes and did that while I coincided with my kind of work life. And yeah, once I quit my job and tried to like get back into the actor world, that was still going on. But kind of getting into the actor life is, you have to kind of, it's all immersive, you know? So I took the show that was elsewhere, and then I came back and really kind of spent my last months in New York sharpening all my kind of actor tools again, because I kind of had to start from scratch. So even though I have some top theaters on my resume, like nobody cares if they're not New York theaters. I just had to really start from scratch, humble myself, and let people get to know me. So now I'm just like, well, since we're starting from scratch, let's just start from scratch where I want to work next, which is LA.
That's cool.
let's take a moment to take a break right now, and we'll come back to a little more digging in. And we're back. So let's jump back in. And I really have this big question about, especially with you, Shannon, how you create and maintain community and the importance of that. And I know that that's really led way to a lot of your like creative projects.
Mm-hmm. Community is such a big word that when I hear it, it sounds like, oh, you have like a lot of close friends, you know, but that's not always. Sometimes people don't mean that either. Sometimes people mean like, oh, you hang or you're doing things with a lot of people like you. And I feel like my idea of community and how I build community is just particular to my own story. So I grew up as a foster kid. I was adopted by my foster mother. And when I went off to college, I was very much a lone roller and like didn't know how to really be social my first 2 years in college. And then I made a distinct choice. I was like, you know, I want to be the person that not that people who are scared of to talk to or intimidated by, but I want to be somebody that like is everybody's friend. Like I felt that that would give me a better quality of life, right? Like I had kind of grown up in an isolation that didn't serve me. And I wanted to change that for myself. So I started to really change how I was in community. And then I started to really develop stronger relationships and like real friends, you know, which I feel like people talk about, oh, make friends when you're in like second grade. But then that matters. Like, how do I make friends when I'm 20? How do I make friends when I'm, you know? So for me, it was being more of who I wanted to be in the world and trying to attract people like that. And showing up authentically as much as I could as myself. And I really did set out an intention to have people be attracted to that, which meant I had to be somebody that people wanted to be around, right? So it mattered to me, like, if I was friendly, if I was kind, if I collaborated, if I really just, you know, paid attention and also, like, didn't hide myself for who I was. That's how I ended up with friends like you, Isabel. You know what I'm saying? Like just me and myself, which is imperfect, but I was honest. And I felt like that allowed you to be honest. And in that, I started building these individuals that they were my community and they were my family. And at that point, I'd already moved from the Bay Area to Chicago. And, you know, I had people back home that might not have served me anymore, but the idea of moving can also make you feel really displaced, right? Mm-hmm. And I was really insecure by that. I was like, you know, what is friends and what is family and what is home if I'm constantly moving around? But over time, I've learned that like community and home are the people that you love. So no matter which city I was in, finding those quality people and those quality relationships was really valuable to me. So I feel like I built that in Chicago. I authentically showed up in many different places. And also throughout my life, I feel like I've always made unconventional friends. I feel like because I'm a performer, people look at me and they're like, oh, she's a cool kid. She's doing all this shit. I bet you she has cool kid friends. And I'm like, yeah, they're fucking cool. They might not be cool to you, but they're fucking cool to me, right? And they're like a hodgepodge of different friends. And I really value that. And I like love when my friends meet and they're from different places. They do different things because that's a testament to me doing that work of showing up in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And that means the world to me. So as I've moved from Chicago back to the Bay Area, made friends there by being authentically myself, and then moving to New York, you know, made friends there by being authentically myself, and realizing that home and friends, although they span multiple different states, instead of feeling insecure about that, I feel really empowered by that. And I do believe that no matter how many times I move, like hold on to those relationships. Like we talked at the beginning of this call, we've known each other since about 2008, you know? Yeah. We might not talk all the time, but if I go to Chicago, best believe I'm trying to track down where you are and right. Like say hi, give you a hug, because you're a relationship that I value. And I try to do that wherever I'm at. So community, again, to me is something that like really is way, way personal. And it is about like this larger extended family that I've built city to city. Because if something goes down with me, like no matter where I am, I feel really happy that like I have a army of people who like are invested in my life, you know, which I didn't have that necessarily for my family. So I feel like I've built that for myself and my friends. But on a work side, when I got to, I'll actually say when I got to Oakland, I was back in a nonprofit job, in a nonprofit job that really wanted to build community within their own work. And I had a group of people that I worked with, but very much became my tribe, my homies, my like clique. Like there was about like four of us that like really just loved each other. And then that expanded and we had some like, you know, external friends. But that really like pressed for me how important it is to have local community too, right? Like, mm-hmm. like on the ground folks, wherever you're at. So then moving to New York, I took that as a value. And to be real, when I first got there, I knew a few people, but I started dating someone and she really introduced me to her network of friends. And I was like, this is super dope, but like, how do I expand this group beyond people you know, how do I show up as authentically me and not be just your girlfriend, right? So for me, I was like, I have to be able to expose myself authentically and show up authentically. And who do I want to do that around? And again, for me, that meant that I wanted to perform. I wanted people to see what I did and not just like see that girl at the party that they're going to make assumptions about, right? I wanted them to know me by what I did and what I stood for. So that's why I created, part of why I created Queer Abstract, because it was a platform not only for me to perform, but to attract community. I'm literally standing on stage, being authentically me, saying the craziest things that come out of my mouth. And, you know, the people who wanted to be in the room were the ones who wanted to be in the room. And I made a lot of beautiful connections in that space. And my value system, it was about getting people to communicate with each other, to kind of get a little bit of what I had been building and experiencing in my personal life. So it was really dope to create a space that was a connectivity space. Another mission of Queer Abstract was to blend the performance and party communities. Because when I think about, again, kind of how I authentically show up, I'm a performer. But in New York, I felt like the performance communities were very elitist. You like had to go to the show at 7 o'clock and buy the ticket and be with the artsy fartsy kids. Or you had to go to the museum and be with the museum kids. Or you had to go to like the like party where everybody dresses up and their fashion is elitist. And that was very exclusionary. And I was like, okay, that sucks. Like, I don't want to go to none of that stuff. I can't hang out with none of you people, you know? And then I partied a lot, but you know, I feel like a city like New York benefits off, you know, queer toxicity, like get drunk queers and just dance. That's all we need from you. And I was like, okay, you know, that is what I'm doing. I'm getting drunk and dance, but this isn't allowing me to build community. So mm-hmm. for me, I created what I wanted to see in the world. So I created Queer Abstract to blend those communities. I put the show at 9 o'clock. I made it a variety show that featured 8 to 10 people. And then I made, there was a party after, so that both of these crowds got a little bit of what they wanted. And again, I got to kind of pull in the people that really wanted to be there, which was really, really dope. And I didn't do that alone. The girlfriend I was dating at the time, she really also worked as the engagement manager. And it really pushed her to challenge herself, again, like outside of her own internal circle. How do you reach to the demographics that you usually wouldn't, you know, and make sure that they know that a space like this exists? And how do we kind of break the idea of cool to really make everybody feel welcome, right? Mm-hmm. So that was really a beautiful mission. And it was interesting because the elitist communities of New York very much judged my show. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. But my show was lowbrow to them. It was free access on purpose. It was cheaply made, so it could be sustainable for me on purpose. And a lot of people didn't like that. That's not what a lot of people moved to New York for. But the people who were living in New York really appreciated that, that there was a place that wasn't elitist that they could go to, which was really, really beautiful and really empowering for me. And yeah, we built this wonderful community. We featured over 300 artists. We had resident DJs, which was really dope. We had about 200 people in the space every month, and people were really drawn to it. And then some people who didn't, it wasn't their bag, but there's so many people in New York, that was A-okay. I'll never forget, one day I went out to a party and I'm standing and I'm dancing and there's one person of color at this party, one person of color. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna go stand next to this person. So I go stand next to her and I'm like dancing and I'm like, oh, you ever hear about these other queer events? And I was like, you hear about Queer Abstract? And she said, oh, that social justice thing?
Oh,
and I was like, ooh, burn. I was like, yeah, that, you know, and I let her do her party. But what it taught me was that, like, my event is not everybody's yum, you know, and I can't yuck somebody else's yum. Some people want, you know, like, a not, like, my thing was social justice. It did have a mission to pull people together. Some people don't want mission. Some people are going to New York for escapism. They're going to be a counterculture. They're going to New York sometimes for the elitism, sometimes for the capitalism. So I had to make peace with the fact that they'll join whatever community feels good for them. And at the end of the day, that's the point, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, Queer Abstract was a great experience in culture. The hard part as a business person is I only really planned for that project to be 1 year and it was successful. So folks wanted it to go longer, but I didn't really properly plan for it to go super long. So it went 3 years total.
Whoa.
And yeah, in the next 2 years, they weren't super organized, I guess you could say, not to the best of their ability, because my goals had changed. Mind you, I quit my job, I went back to my artist life, that changed everything for my schedule, that changed things for like how available I was. It was really important for me to, you know, I took this show out of town, right? I traveled a lot. I did all these things that like really I needed for my soul, but the community really needed me to be on the ground. And I wasn't there for that. And I did include the other staff members and the other people involved in the show to help maintain. But what I learned is the way that I structured the show was so centered on me being a entertainer in it, that it would change people's attendance. And then I had to kind of deal with that from a business standpoint. And I learned that in order for this to stay at the level of success, I have to stay attached to it. And my goals were changing. So I was like, I'm gonna wrap this up. So we gave it a very cute beginning, middle, and end. And also too, what I learned in New York is a testament to how successful an event is how long it goes. So they were like, a lot of people were like, you ain't gonna be nothing until you go 5-6 years. And I was like, I'm not doing that, okay? Yeah. And I wanted to teach New Yorkers that what you create for the community and for the culture does not have to be your identity. It can just be a project, you know? So I gave Queer Abstract a beginning, a middle, and end, and I encouraged my audience to create their own, you know, to just do your own. And I still actually owe a lot of the community in New York. I wanted to give them some information and how to's, like, this is the one-on-one I had to do it. And I didn't get around to it towards the end of my, time during that project, but I really owe them that, because I really do hope that more people start. But that I built it with, again, not a model that served its sustainability. Nonprofits have learned this. You should not build with one person at the pinnacle. It doesn't allow for sustainability. And people would ask, like, is there somebody to take it over? And nobody wanted to take that responsibility because responding to the community is huge. It is a responsibility, not only, you know, what you show up and you give them, but like, how you give it to them, you know, if there's any missteps, any troubleshooting, how you take care of them, there's a lot of customer service that is involved. It wasn't just like me telling jokes on stage. It was me making sure that, you know, that there were seats in the front for folks who were disabled. There were, you know, that access was never a problem, that, you know, the whole venue knew how to deal with the trans POC community, levels and levels and levels, which not a lot of people wanted to take the reins of. But it was a beautiful experience in New York. And also another thing about New York's community specifically that makes it hard is they're a transient community. So they rotate. They rotate every year. It's a very much a college town, and nobody talks about New York in that way. But they have so many colleges. So there's always new young people coming in. Our event was 21 and up, but there's always new people turning 21. So there's a, there was a constant need for my engagement on the ground in community, which I also ran out of energy for. I wanted to preserve more for myself and not be on the ground as much. And this show really required that. Otherwise, like I can say in my third year, I wasn't really on the ground a lot. And there was a whole generation of new queers that I wasn't friends with, you know? And that is what made me successful, was these authentic connections that I wasn't making them. So that was hard. So, you know, it had its limits, and that's why we wrapped it up. Another whole project that is also based off the community and speaks to a lot of this. For the past 10 years, I've been participating in the Fly Honey Show in Chicago. The Fly Honey Show features around 300 artists per show, 25 person band, a massive production staff, huge community. My role in that show is mainly the writer and really kind of like the mission-based consultant. Every year, the creator and I sit down and we talk about how's the show doing? What was the feedback from the last year? How can we make it relevant this year? And what does the community need from us, right? And that show has super expanded. And even though I'm not there, I do have more people on that production team who are on the ground maintaining those relationships. And I am just a participant making sure that the mission is what's pulling those relationships there. That show is pretty much rooted in feminism and body positivity and inclusivity, and making sure that they're not just coming because it's a burlesque inspired show and everyone's in their undies, but people are really involved in this community because they feel welcome, because they feel seen, and because they feel that they can fully express themselves via that performance avenue. But again, I'll have a whole team that is on board to help maintain those relationships. And no matter where I go, I definitely feel a part of the hive no matter what. We just did a project that was released, I think yesterday or the day before, called DIY Fly, which was our first online rendition of the show, which was really, really powerful. So hopefully more people got to see it. But that is something that, like, we've built such a strong community in Chicago. Our question for the last like 5 years has been how to scale that. How do you scale that? And the hardest part is, you know, if you're not on the ground doing it, then what does that look like? But yeah, community means a lot. But at the end of the day, for me, community is like, who is in your inner circle? Who have you kind of built relationships with, and how are you holding on to those relationships? So that's what's most important to me. And I know another thing with the New York community is I knew I was going to move. I knew that I was not going to be on the ground being able to serve that community forever. So I kind of really just passed the baton to the people who can, you know, passed that network. I really referred a whole lot of the people who came to my show to other shows, to other outlets, and hopefully that they are still building community, whether it's with me or without me.
It sounds like you're really adept at building community wherever you go. How do you think about, or do you think about, like, laying down roots somewhere semi-permanently or permanently? I ask this because I kind of struggle with this question. You know, like, I lived in Chicago for 13 years, I think. I grew up in Guam. I'm living here in the Bay Area now. I've lived here like a couple of times. I lived in LA for a bit. And it's like, I like the nomadism, you know, I like being able to feel free enough to pick up my life and move somewhere else. But then I also feel like my girlfriend right now, she grew up here And to see like her network of friends and family, it just like blows my mind because she's still friends with people that she went to like kindergarten with, you know? And that's so beautiful. And
that's so Bay Area.
Yeah. Yeah. It is totally Bay Area. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I totally feel you. I mean, again, for me, it was a huge struggle at first where I was really kind of hurt by it and was like, why am I not like everybody else? Like, why can't I just either stay in one place or why can't I just find a place that feels good and like want to stay there? But I feel proud now, and I hope you do as well. Like, not everybody can pick up and go. Mm-hmm. First,
that's all yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
It's a totally different type of tenacity that really spirals people into existential crisis. And you've done it a few times now, right? So like, I feel really empowered by that. Mm-hmm. But again, like, I'm also comforted by, I've just embraced that my people are everywhere. And that makes mm-hmm. me feel really good that I feel like I have a kind of a national network. I feel like if I go somewhere, I got people. That makes me feel safe. But the question of like laying down roots, it's a bit of a grab bag for me. One of the things is where do I want to work and where mm-hmm. is the work? Yeah. And that dictates a lot about where I go. And then the other one is like, how do I want to live?
Yeah.
Right? How do I want to live? One of the big questions that I was asked, and I still think it's one of the smartest questions to this day, when I was looking at colleges, my college advisor said, what weather do you want to live in?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Right? Yeah. About that. Like, who would have thought that'd be the not what do you want to study? Not who do you, yeah. what do you want to be? What weather do you want to live in? And I said, cool. Anything but the winter. Right. So I'm looking at all these schools, and then I eventually settled on DePaul in Chicago, which is a cold place, but I was driven there by what I wanted to do and study, and I was willing to take the sacrifice of weather, right? Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. And I did it, but I think about that, and they asked that of like, what environment is actually gonna serve you? Right? Because if I would have chosen warm weather and ended up at Stanford, I would have died. Because if you've ever been on Stanford's campus, it's super spread out. It's huge. It's warm, but it's not social. It's not really in a city. It didn't offer me lifestyle things that would have fulfilled me. Chicago, very much, even though I had the winter, it offered me lifestyle things that fulfilled me. Even the campus is right, you know, 20 minutes from Aloha. Like, I was able to like meet real people not far from my campus. And that added color to my life, right? Like my life experience. So I think about that too. Like, I've always wanted to live in New York. I did live in New York. And then living there, I was like, I don't know if I want to get old here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to do this, you know, for too much longer. So then it became a question of real estate. Like, what kind of living do I want to live in? What kind of environment do I want to mm-hmm. live in? And I can say that there's no perfect place and no perfect answer.
Yeah.
For instance, like LA is on my plan right now. It is going to allow for a better apartment, like a more spacious apartment. It's going to allow for warmer weather. It doesn't give me the seasons that I love, right. Chicago or New York. It also isn't going to give me the density mm-hmm. or even the economic kind of breakdown and small business breakdown that New York did. I'm forever going to miss that. And I also embrace that American cities are unique within themselves, and that's how they are supposed to be built. Mm-hmm. So some people are like, what do you like better, New York or Chicago? There's no comparison.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No comparison, mm-hmm. because you can't get a chopped cheese in Chicago and you can't get like a devil dog in New York. Like, there's yeah. just certain things that you're not going to be able to do. It's not built that way. So I am embracing the things I do love about a place and saying like, how long do I want to live in this experience? And that makes me feel good. So I don't know, once I move to LA, if I decide that, okay, I can see myself getting older here. I don't have that answer yet. And I'm kind of okay with that. I do know that I love Chicago and I could see myself getting older there, but I'm not ready to get old yet. So what do I want to feel in my life experience that's going to make me feel like I did my life, like I fulfilled my whole life? And I love how you were speaking about your partner and how like she has a whole ecosystem built in. And I said, that's so Bay Area. Well, that makes, for me, I'm also from the Bay Area, so I kind of understand. The houses are built at, on an independent family model.
Mm.
That's how they grew up.
Yeah, you're right.
And mostly when you age out, you know, of 18, age out of adolescence, most people stay close. Why? It's because a lot of funding is in their local colleges and local schools. There's no incentive to leave the state because yeah. California really pumps money into local education. And the family values are still independent family values. So stay here, stay close to your tia, stay close to your tia, stay close to the family, independent family models. Now, if you're a New York kid, you're not raised that way. You are a child of the city, right? Mm-hmm. So very much where you grew up dictates your beliefs. And you just have to decide, do you actually believe that and want to participate or not? All my cousins are still in the Bay. I'm the only one that's nomadic. And but I had a hunger for a life that they didn't necessarily have a hunger for. And that's just way more of a testament to what I've seen, what I've experienced, and what I wanted, you know? So I hope similar for you, just keep following your heart. And like, you know, I would just recommend like, be confident that your heart is going to lead you to the right place, you know, and that these traditional ideas of home, they just might not have served you. Look how beautiful of a life you've lived and how many friends you've made because of what you've done with it, you know, and that that doesn't have to stop at any point because somebody's traditional idea of settling down, you know.
Shannon.
Just saying.
Oh my gosh.
It's good stuff. Like you did that. You did that. You know? And I'm like, I don't know your whole story, but I'm like, who else did that? Like you did it, you know, and you're doing it and you could do it again. And that's so dope to me. And again, it's being, that's how you be authentically you. You keep following your heart and you decide for yourself what settling down looks like.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for this free therapy session. I'm going to take it. Embody this.
But it is hard. I mean, not only is it built into our ecosystem, but it's very much built into our country's values. Mm-hmm. It's built into our cultural, American culture dictates like, listen to your parents, do what's going to make them happy. Like there's all these kind of conditions in our culture. I can say it sucks sometimes, or sometimes I hurt my own feelings because I'm not traditional. I don't follow the confines of other people's, you know, things, which sucks. Like I've spent some Christmases alone, you know, spent some Thanksgivings where I'm like, which city do I go to? Or everybody left this city and right. Now I'm just here. This is my home. So there's been some hard times with living a non-conventional life. But I'll give you this too. One of my favorite memories, when I returned back to Oakland, I was around a lot of family. And one of my cousins, we grew up like fighting like cats and dogs. And now that we're adults, we're like, we're cool. So we're sitting on the porch and she says to me, Shannon, you can't stop traveling. And I was like, why? And she says, because you're encouraging the rest of us to travel.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. My little sister said the same thing to my grandma about me. I was like, right. Oh, yeah.
And one of my other cousins said too, she was like, you know, how do you do it? Like, how do you, she's very much in tied with the independent family model of California. You know, she's like, I have a niece now. She was like, but you have nieces and nephews and you've traveled. And I told her the same thing. Look at what of a value you would be if you go color your experience and you have all that information to give back to them. Yeah. If you stay home and you don't vary your experience, then not that you don't have anything, but you could have more, you know? So you got to live your life. Definitely got to live your own life.
Totally agreed. Yeah. Shannon, thank you so much for all of us. This is so good.
Yeah, it was amazing.
This is so great. So if you would like to join us for these wonderful chats on how you on how you have been creative and productive during these times. Or if you've got questions for us or Shannon on anything that we talked about today, you can reach out to us.
Yeah, email us at workingclassyshow@gmail.com.
Or you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at working_classy.
Or facebook.com/workingclassyshow, but we don't use it or check it. So
we're just going to be honest with you.
Any of the other ways.
I don't know.
And yeah, Shannon, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram. My handle is S and my last name, MATESKY. I have a website, which is my name. I don't really use Twitter a whole lot, but you can find me there. But mostly find me on Instagram or my website. Don't be scared to slide through the DMs. I check all the time and we'll answer your questions.
Awesome. And now to close out, we've got a
tip nugget of the week.
My tip nugget of the week is, as productive as you want to be, don't forget that this is a supreme time that we are only going to get once to get the quality of rest that we actually deserve.
Ooh.
Don't forget to rest.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah. I feel like so many people kind of push in the other direction. Like, oh, I'm going to get like super ripped during this pandemic, or, you know, like finally write that book. And, you know, it's great. Yeah. But yeah, consider.
Also rest. I mean, I feel like resting allows for everything you've studied to sink in, you know, it allows you to gain some perspective. I can speak for myself, but my last few years in New York, they moved a mile a minute, and I did just need to slow down and process what just happened to my body and what just happened to my spirit. And yeah, there's a lot of pressure to produce, but I sleep in and I take pauses, and sometimes I don't answer emails on purpose. Like, don't forget that your rest is valuable, because you are not your productivity.
Awesome. All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talk guys.
So good later. To see you.
Fun.
Bye.
Thanks.